AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Excuse me, please. May I have your attention? A federal judge in Florida has struck down the federal mask mandate on all forms of public transportation, including your daily ride along with Davis and me. So, for the first time in 2 years, welcome to a maskless AgriTalk. No, you can take it off.
Wait a second, we're taking masks off. Yeah. Live from Maskless Tuesday Morn via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Bill Thayer from PhilLogic. Then it's Congresswoman Vicky Hartzler. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Oh, it's good to be back to normal, isn't it, man? It has seemed so weird sitting in the studio all by myself, and as soon as the bell rings, you got to throw a mask on. You know, it just seems weird.
Well, it's, you know, it was for safety. We were going through a whole thing there. You know,
is that what
actually,
it was?
I'm sighing a healthy sigh of health-based relief. I thought I had pink eye.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, last couple days. My eye was getting swollen and weird, you know?
Yeah.
Felt like I had something in it.
Oh.
Woke up in the middle of the night last night, and there was this weird sort of thing sticking out.
Oh.
It was a sty. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fixing itself, America. I'm fine.
Oh, man.
I'm fine.
Oh, okay.
It was
good.
A little gross.
Good.
But I'm fine.
Jeez. Well, we are all glad to hear that, Davis. We're,
you know, the mask doesn't help
it.
You with pink eye. That's what they don't tell you. You think it's gonna, you think it's gonna help. You can still get pink
doesn't.
Eye.
It doesn't.
Does it?
That mask does nothing for that. That's right. That's right.
It really doesn't. Just a little personal hygiene is really
kidding.
The key with the
of
pink
course.
Eye.
Of course, but there are
no, we're
a
not.
Lot of people.
Mask doesn't
well,
help
I
with
am.
Pink eye. Right?
No, you are right. You are
those
right.
Those face shields. Now, that would help with pink eye because you can't reach in there and, you know, rub your grimy fingers into your eyeball.
Dude, what are you doing?
I'm helping.
I don't know if that's true or not. Welcome to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. That is Davis Michelson.
I'm fine.
Man, he's fine, everyone. He is fine. We've got a great conversation coming your way this morning. We're going to talk supply chain logistics, how to get stuff from point A to point B as efficiently as we possibly can. Bill Thayer, we're going to get his take on what is going on in China and what kind of disruptions that could create further down the line and in the days, weeks, months ahead. And then, of course, Representative Vicky Hartzler had a very an editorial amplifying. Well, let's see. It's you know what? I don't have the headline of it in front of me right now, but it is about preventing Biden's attack on agriculture.
Oh,
so I am really looking forward to the conversation with Representative Hartzler about what is going on with that. Okay, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, World Bank Chief Economist Carmen Reinhart said the global economy is passing through a period of, quote, exceptional uncertainty, and added that she would not rule out further downgrades to the growth outlook. The Washington-based institution lowered its estimate for global growth in 22 to 3.2% from 4.1% in January, of course, over Russia's invasion of Ukraine and China's lockdowns to combat COVID stress. The World Bank is also looking to discuss a new crisis response package. Now, Chip, moving on beyond 2023, global growth forecast is set to decline about 3.3% over the medium term. Chip.
Okay. Yeah. There's the meeting that is taking place right now is all about projections, and it's all about trying to figure out how to get the best results from the global economy. And in the environment that we're in right now, boy, if you take a snapshot of the current environment and try to lay some policies in place to grow the economy going forward, that could be a big mistake.
Well, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has organized a high-level panel of officials to address food security issues in the wake of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, including heads of the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, International Fund for Ag Development, along with ministers from the G7 and from the G20. So they're going to have a big old confab over this whole deal, Chip.
That's right. That's right.
U.S. troops will reportedly train Ukrainian counterparts to use the artillery pieces headed their way against Russian forces gathering in Ukraine's Donbas region, defense officials said yesterday. Meanwhile, international sanctions are beginning to choke Russia's economy, where Moscow's mayor warned that 200,000 jobs are at risk in the capital alone, while the head of the central bank warned that the effects of Russia's isolation were just beginning to be felt. Natural gas is trading up at its highest price point in well over a decade. NYMEX futures have risen above $7.50. That's a 25% increase since the 1st of April and 113% above the end of last year. Supportive factors include cool temperatures, lower storage levels, and high demand for U.S. LNG in Europe, where prices are in the $30 range, continue to support robust LNG shipments there. Projects jump-started by the bipartisan infrastructure law must use American-made steel, iron, and other materials, the Biden administration announced. The move was said to be an effort to bolster domestic manufacturing, although it includes an opportunity for waivers from the requirement if U.S. capacity cannot meet demand. And a group of 45 senators and 154 members of the House have filed an amicus brief with the U.S. Supreme Court requesting the court reverse a lower court ruling on the waters of the U.S. rule. The lawmakers detailed several arguments for the nation's top court to narrow the determination of what constitutes a navigable water under the CWA. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Karen Bonert, the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Hello, Chip. How's it going?
We're doing just fine. Just fine. Hey, how the dairies up in the snow belt from last week? How'd they handle things?
Yeah, well, they're not obviously as lucky as I am as I'm looking outside to sunshine and green grass. The storm of the century came through, called that Snowmageddon, plowed through the northern prairie, dumping up to 30 inches late last week. So while dairy farmers are not calving outside, Chip, like our beef friends, this still plays havoc and adds to the headache of getting all the chores done in 24 hours. So what it spells out, closed road means no milk truck, right? No milk truck means milk has to be dumped. And that was a case of a producer in Dickinson that I spoke to. They had to dump 11,000 pounds of milk. And really, that's real money down the literally down the drain. Another 750 cow dairy in Bismarck said that they, in preparation, had an extra tanker dropped off, but they overfilled that and still had to dump milk. So the Dickinson dairy had reported that they only had one cow that calved during the blizzard. And while she calved inside, to move her from the calving barn to the parlor, the blizzard, it was too treacherous. So they had to wait until the blizzard was done to move her to the milking parlor in the morning. So just crazy things. When you talk to them about spring field work, they have no clue when that will be. They still have liquid manure to inject, and said that they were in extreme drought mode. But I'm sure, you know, the crazy thing is when you get 20, 30 inches of snow, what is that real moisture equivalent?
Right.
And so that's still to be determined. And unfortunately, another North Dakota dairy had their freestall barn collapse because of all the snow. And they, thankfully, no animals were hurt, but they had to relocate 1,100 cows. So crazy, crazy. You go south to Texas, and obviously that's a completely different story.
Right.
With the intense winds adding to the drought. So weather is a headline from coast to coast, north to south, and so it'll be closely watched as farmers prepare for spring field work.
Yep, weather's a big factor for the dairy markets as well. All right, Karen, good work. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep.
All right, we'll be right back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
AgriTalk is brought to you by new Bond Silage Speed C, aerobically stable corn silage in 14 days. Learn more at bondsilageusa.com/speed. It's fast.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us. Davis Michelson.
Yes, sir.
He is lurking here as well.
Standing by.
Davis, we go all the way back to last spring. Early summer, I guess, talking about the supply chain disruptions that we've been dealing with on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And now with the shutdowns in Shanghai, the shutdowns in other major Chinese cities and ports, it's all creating a high level of anxiety that we are going to run into some similar disruptions. When I look at the number of ships that are sitting off of the Chinese coast right now, it's mind-blowing and very confusing on how they are going to deal with the backlogs once we get operations back up and running. So let's try to get a handle on how things are going to work out from Bill Thayer. Bill is co-founder and CEO of Philogic, and Bill joins us right now. Bill, welcome to AgriTalk.
Hey, Chip. Thanks for having me, man.
Glad that you are here. So your LinkedIn profile, I found it interesting because it ended with, if you've got something broken, on fire, sinking, etc., or if you want to talk about tech-enabled solutions and the transformation of physical retail, let's connect. Dude, there are a lot of things broken, on fire, and sinking right now in the supply chain. Let's talk about some of those issues that you deal with on a regular basis.
Sure. So I appreciate you're the one person that read that part of my LinkedIn profile. So props to you for that one. That's good. You know, it's funny as you're talking about, you know, the last 2 years talking about supply chain disruption. You know, supply chain has always been sort of at this precipice for, I'd say, the last 10 to 20 years with the rise of e-commerce. So, like, for example, everyone's talking about driver shortage. The driver shortage has been a problem for 10, 15 years. When, you know, the federal government instituted hours of service, you know, to be able to, you know, reduce trucking accidents by having people off the road more often. Everyone's always complaining about roads being in various, you know, terrible shape. Right. Well, it's just become that much, you know, worse. But I think the biggest issue here is with the onset of the pandemic in early 2020, the growth of e-commerce, right? 10 years of growth in 18 months. Pushed everything over the edge. So the problem today is really a lack of capacity, right? There is not enough boats, trains, buildings, drivers, people to be able to handle the demand, quote unquote demand. So e-commerce has dropped off a little bit. Stores have started to pick up, but the infrastructure that supports the supply chain has changed forever. Because I get questions, hey, when's it going to go back to normal? There's no such thing as normal, right? January of 2020, it's over. So infrastructure, unfortunately, is just in disarray.
Right, right. So tell us about Philogic before we get any deeper into this, because I want people to have an understanding of why we're talking about this, okay?
Yep. So when I talk about, you know, lack of capacity, right, one of the things is, by adding additional capacity to these networks, networks can then, you know, you're basically taking that blocking point and, you know, increasing in the ability to kind of flow things through. You know, and look, logistics is pretty simple. The process of moving something through a system. And there's lots of parts of our systems right now that are impacted by the lack of capacity. So what we do at Philogic, we take underutilized spaces in retail centers, primarily shopping malls, and convert them into tech-enabled micro distribution hubs. And so when you think about it, right, there's lots of talk about the last mile. Hey, how do we make last mile more efficient? Well, last mile carriers, nobody makes money at last mile. Amazon doesn't make money at last mile. It's all about how do you optimize processes in the middle mile. And that's exactly what Flogic does. So we take locations that are outside of what's called the GLA, the gross leasable area, in these shopping mall locations, you know, with elbow joints, storage locations, truck tunnels, and convert them into, you know, small distribution centers, whether it's inbound e-commerce fulfillment, store-based fulfillment, reverse logistics. So we're opening additional network capacity that allows retailers to be more efficient, transportation providers to be more efficient, but we also provide the technology and the tracking to provide better network visibility to our customers and just improve costs.
Okay, so improving that middle mile, I love that whole concept. And if you're using mall space there, you've got no shortage of supply of space then, do you?
Well, you know, the way we look at it is, you know, we're not a, let's put it this way, a retail tenant. We're a solution provider. So the mall owners that we are working with, right, the biggest mall owners and the most, you know, well-run mall owners, people like Simon Property Groups, Taubman, Macerich, Brookfield Property Retail, Tanger Outlets, you know, that has a network of up to 450 locations. We have, and if there's going to be the continued contraction in the shopping market in the shopping mall space, there's about 1,100 enclosed shopping malls. There probably should be 700, but the 450 that we have access to, those are the best facilities in the locations closest to where consumers live, you know, transact, and just, you know, basically do anything, whether it is online or offline shopping. So we're operating, and we always say to people, we're not last mile, but we make last mile efficient, because last mile, if it's, you know, one package to one individual, if you can't aggregate, you're done. So we're we're an aggregator, but the number one thing is we're B2B logistics infrastructure. And since we do multiple things, we're much more efficient.
What kind of impact do you think that the service that you're providing is having on the overall supply chain? I mean, I understand making that middle mile more efficient and so on, but it seems to me that is moving us away, a step further away from the just-in-time deliveries to having some sort of inventory at least close to the consumers. So that's a stabilizing factor, isn't it?
Well, so think about just-in-time manufacturing. Just-in-time has all been broken by what's happened within the supply chain infrastructure. Because the idea is saying, hey, I'm going to have something programmed in the Pacific Rim, and I'm going to buy that 6 months in advance. And then a month before I need it on the floor, I'm actually going to have it shipped. Well, you have stuff that was sitting off the port of LA for months, right? A lot of retail, the only retailers that won through peak last year was off-price. Because anybody in the off-price world, and look, I spent most of my career in off-price before I started this business, you know, they're laughing all the way to the bank. They got the best product because it never got off the boat to be sold. So just-in-time manufacturing has really taken a shot. So supply chain execution, it's been tough. When you think about nearshoring and everything that's going on to try to improve the supply chain, that takes time, right? It's not something to think, okay, I'm going to nearshore my supply chain. Great. Well, 5 years, 6 years.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's not a snap your finger, let's make them here kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about processor chips and so on. It takes time to build that. Well, there's the word again, build the infrastructure to build to manufacture the supply. It's not easy. Bill, is this what you think the future of the supply chain looks like, or does it continue to evolve and change going forward? You said it right at the very start. There is no normal.
Yeah. Here's the way I look at it, Chip. 2 years ago when, you know, as my co-founder and I were building out the business and hiring and opening locations, you know, the feedback was, well, when's it going to stabilize? And the prognosticator is like, oh, it's late 2021. And I was like, no, late 22 if we're lucky. In the beginning of last year, I said 23 if we're lucky. But, you know, one of the things that you've got to take into account, it's a pandemic that has exacerbated global trade like at no other time since the Second World War, right? Because we're taking capacity out of the network. You know, whether the boat is hung up in a port or it's the bottom of the ocean because it got sunk, that's sort of what we're looking at here, right? Capacity out of the network. But now you throw a war into it, right? And what's happening in Ukraine, you're taking valuable NVOCC resources, and they're getting blocked up and they're moving resources. It's crazy. So look, let's say Ukraine gets resolved in the next 6 months. Maybe it's 23. And the thing is, the new normal is going to look a lot different than the old normal. And it's not going to be legislated. It's not going to be solved by the states. It's going to be solved by, you know, folks that are building businesses from the bottoms up, people like us. There's a lot of other businesses that are doing a lot of great things out there. It's going to be the private industry that solves this.
Bill, let's stay in touch, man. Great conversation, great insight into what is going on in there. And wow, great idea for Phil Logic there. Bill, thank you so much.
Hey,
that's Bill Thayer. You bet. That's he's co-founder and CEO of Phil Logic. We're going to have Representative Hartzler up next on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, after a big start to the week yesterday with sharply higher prices, bit of a pullback today. What's going on?
Yeah, that's what's going on. Corrective selling. So wheat's leading us down. Nearby SRW contracts are leading the corrective losses here. And that's pulling the corn market down as well. You know, in the soy complex, the oil's under moderate to heavy pressure because of sharp losses in crude oil. That's weighing on soybeans a little bit, but the soy meal market's trading to the upside, so that's limiting the seller interest in the soybean market this morning.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're getting long meal, short oil, or if they're unwinding the long oil, short meal spreads today, but there's got to be some kind of spread activity between the two products.
Yeah, I think it is the unwinding of the long oil, short meal spreads.
Okay.
But, you know, I guess we won't really know for certain, but that appears to be what's going on here.
Very good, very good. So a little bit of pressure on the corn market, put some buying back into the feeder cattle market, right?
Absolutely. They, you know, heavy losses yesterday, and we're seeing moderate to strong gains in the front end of that market today, like you said, because of the weakness in the corn market. So with corn at these price levels, the feeder cattle are going to react on almost every single day to movement up or down in corn futures. Today it happens to be up after yesterday's losses. That's also helping out live cattle futures. And, that, you know, there's hopes that we'll see strength on the back end of last week's more than $2 gains in the cash market there.
Right, right. Big move to the upside, a little bit of follow-through in hogs.
Well, you know, they started lower, but now we're starting to see some buyer interest develop here mid-morning.
All right, we've got Brian on this afternoon's AgriTalk as well. Thanks, Brian.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Davis, I really enjoyed that conversation with Bill Thayer from Phil Logic.
What a great concept.
Yep. Tools and resources around us that can be used to improve the supply chain and the delivery process out there. I think It's really interesting, and it's something that we need to think about on how that type of a concept, of course, can be applied to agricultural products out there. So we'll talk more about that later. Right now, let's bring in Representative Vicki Hartzler. She represents the 4th District of Missouri and joins us right now. Representative Hartzler, welcome to AgriTalk.
Well, thanks, Chip. Glad to be here.
Glad that you're here. We got some good news yesterday from the federal judge down in Florida striking down the CDC's mask mandate. I assume that you support that decision.
Absolutely. In fact, I led a letter back in April asking that the CDC would, you know, stop this and allow freedom to reign again. But unfortunately, they extended that mandate into May, and most of us just in Congress say this is ridiculous. It's going against the science. It's only for political science that they are doing this, and I'm thankful that a judge saw through all that and has stepped in and say, hey, you know, give people the option, give them the choice, but no government should have to, you know, still force this mask mandate on people.
Right. Right. Yeah, I'm in full agreement with that. Okay. This is interesting. Your op-ed or your editorial that was published here recently. Here's how we can combat the Biden administration's war on agriculture. What inspired you to pen this op-ed?
Well, I am a lifelong farmer myself. My husband and I raise corn, soybeans, wheat. We have a cow-calf operation, and I'm the only member of Missouri's congressional delegation that is on the House Agriculture Committee. So I feel very much that we need to speak up for agriculture, and it seems like every day we're under assault by some new regulation or taxation. Even this week, the Biden administration has proposed in their budget that there's a new tax increase on basically farmers called mark to market, where we would be taxed on the value, the increased value of our farmland if we have held it over 90 years. So if you've had that farm in the family for years and generations, and back in 1940, your great grandparents or whoever bought that for $30 an acre, and now it's almost $4,000 to $5,000 an acre. Out of the blue, you would have to cough up money and send it to the federal government, which, of course, most people don't have those hundreds of thousands of dollars and would end up having to sell the farm in order to do it. And so on the one hand, the Biden administration is trying to increase taxes on farmers. On the other hand, they're trying to redefine waters of the U.S. definition to give the federal government control of over 99% of our land again. We've just got to stop and push back on this, and that's what my op-ed talks about.
Okay, very good. I want to talk a little bit more about the mark-to-market, because this is one that feels to me, Representative Hartzler, like it has no chance of passing, of being adopted. But we need to make sure that there's no way that a proposal like that make sure that there is no way that it has a chance of being adopted. And that means we've got to talk about it as much as we can.
Absolutely. And, you know, in his budget last year, he proposed doing away with stepped up basis and basically putting the new capital gains tax on inherited property, which is basically another death tax. And mm-hmm. due to the outrage and the voices of agriculture in rural Missouri that spoke up, and those of us in Congress who represent them, you know, they backed off in that, and we succeeded in that. But they're just going to yep. keep trying to come back again and again, and our voices need to be heard once again.
Right, right. I agree. It's time to rally the troops again and make sure that some of these proposals don't see the light of day. You mentioned the waters of the U.S., WOTUS. What's the latest development there?
Well, they're still taking input right now. So I encourage people to actually go online and make a comment to the EPA about their new rule, which does away with a common sense policy that was established under Trump and reverses back to the Obama policy, and weigh in and say, this is going to be detrimental. So they're going to take all this comments. Then they're going to try to finalize this rule, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to stop it in Congress after this next election, if we can take back the House and the Senate as far as Republicans, and this rule does go into effect, we can try to reverse it by passing legislation to reverse it, or we can put some funding limitations on the next year's budget and preclude it from being implemented. So we'll have to play defense and try to do it that way. But obviously, it'd be better if we could have you know, millions of Americans weigh in right now and for the Biden administration to back off.
Right, right. Yeah, the navigable waters is such a key in determining just how the waters of the U.S. will be managed going forward. I hope that that we certainly get back to including their jurisdiction over only the navigable waters. Okay, we're dealing with inflation on a level that we haven't seen in 40 years, Representative Hartzler.
Right.
What should the federal government, if anything, what should the federal government be doing to fight inflation?
Well, quit spending money that we don't have. This was fueled directly from Biden's overspending policies last March, about a year ago. They shoved through the House and the Senate a $1.9 trillion additional spending package. Then they passed a giant infrastructure bill that's going to be even more money. And the definition of inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods. And so the first thing is to quit sending out all this money into the economy that is just fueling this. But secondly is to address some of the supply chain issues. I know your earlier guest talked about that, but you know, we've got to first and foremost have American made energy again. You know, the Biden administration has a war on American energy, and that is fueling the prices. You know, farmers are paying 83% more for diesel this year. Our fertilizer prices are 2, 3, 4, 5 times what they were, so farmers can't even afford to buy them. And a lot of the ammonia is made from natural gas. So if you know, increase the production of that, that'll help bring down the fertilizer prices as well. So just increasing the supply of some of these critical things, plus not spending money, is what we need to be doing to help address these inflation crises.
On the fertilizer side of things, should we be looking at lifting some of the tariffs that are on fertilizer imports?
Yes, I co-led a letter earlier before the invasion of Ukraine asking them to reconsider the tariff being put on from Belarus, some of the potash coming in from them, exempting those additional countervailing duties on that for ag. But we've also got to take steps to produce more potash and phosphorus here in America. We have those mineral reserves, but due to the environmental regulations that has pushed a lot of that production to Canada, Russia, China, Morocco, you name it, other countries. And so I am supportive of looking at listing them as critical rare earth minerals. And they, if we do that, that puts them under a different environmental protocol, a little less stringent, and maybe we could produce our own right here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Very good. Let's talk about amplifying processing of livestock in the United States, the A-Plus Act. I love this. It's support for smaller regionalized processing of livestock. Seems like this really gets to the heart of what you do every day on your operation, doesn't it?
You know, we need to have as much competition as possible for the big four meat packers. We need to give our cattlemen more options of where they can take their cattle, and local regional packing plants, I think, are the way to go. And my bill that you referenced allows for owners of livestock auction markets to be able to invest in meat packing plants. There's an outdated regulation from the early 1900s that prevents them from being able to invest in or participate in management or operation of a packing plant. And yet a lot of them, they're savvy business owners. They understand the cattle industry, and they could invest or start their own local meat packing plant that would give more options. So we need to remove this obstacle and give give the more people the option to invest in these plants, and that'll give more options for our cattlemen to send their cattle somewhere locally.
Very good. Very good. Just we've only got about a minute left here, but I got to ask you about the border and the situation on our southern border. I know that you want to see some action taken there.
You bet. We had 2 million illegal encounters last year. This year, we've already seen over a million, 221,000 in March record. Number of people, 23 that we found were actual terrorists that were stopped last year. And there's over 400,000 that they estimate they weren't even able to process or capture. And so who knows how many terrorists have come in here. So we've got to secure the border. This is the Department of Homeland Security is supposed to be protecting us. And instead, the Biden administration wants to do away with Title 42, which will increase the amount coming. They think could be up to 18,000 illegal immigrants will pour across our border if that is removed. So I'm hopeful the Biden administration will rethink that and certainly prioritize securing our border once again.
All right. Good stuff. Representative Hartzler, I hope we can get you back on AgriTalk and talk about these issues again.
I'll look forward to it. Thanks so much.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That is Representative Vicki Hartzler from Missouri. Davis and I will be back to wrap up this morning's AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's April 19 online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone, on this Tuesday morn. Davis Michelson here with Chip Flory.
Yes.
You know, yesterday was Monday, of course.
Yes.
For supper, I actually had chicken tacos. So I'm a little bit ahead of the game. I don't know what. Maybe I'll have more tacos on this Tuesday.
Pulling the future forward again, even at supper time.
Even at supper time. You know, it's not. This is a lifestyle, Chip, is what it is. Pulling the future forward is a lifestyle.
Why but, wait? Let's do it.
Why? I want to get to some details, especially on the conversation with Bill Thayer from PhilLogic. Fascinating stuff in there. It feels like something's afoot in the grain markets. We've got beans turning back to the upside. We've got wheat off the lows. What do you make of this?
What I make of this is the buying is coming back into the market because nobody wants to stand in front of it. I hate this as an answer to your question.
Okay.
But I think it's probably legitimate. Nobody's willing to stand in front of it and sell it. I think that's about all that it is, Davis. We're going to have a conversation this afternoon with Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer, on the PM hour of AgriTalk. But we'll get some more of the detail there. But soybean meal is pulling to the upside. Soybean oils come off the lows. And soybeans have actually turned to the upside. We've got them 2.5 to 5.5 cents higher. Corn's off the lows. Wheat's off the lows. It feels pretty good. One thing in the corn market that I've got to make mention of, and I'm not exactly sure what the count is right now, but if you have not looked at the December 23 corn futures contract, take a look at that rally, kids. That is as consistent an increase in price as I can ever remember saying. I mean, we got to be getting close to 20 higher consecutive closes in here. It's really remarkable.
A new voice for us, Bill Thayer from PhilLogic, talking, broadly, maybe we could say he's a logistics expert, perhaps?
Yes.
We could call
yes.
it that. There's a lot more nuance to it than that. That's sort of my broad take on it. A couple of things that he said. Supply chain has been a problem for 10 to 20 years, but the e-commerce related to the pandemic, to people being at home. Dude, I've got, you know, we can go out and shop for groceries now. You can take the mask off. And, you know, people are vaccinated, whatever. There's as much comfort as you're willing to accept, I believe, or as is possible in the system right now, as we've seen in literally years.
Yeah.
I still have urban dweller friends. It's not so much in my neck of the woods, just because we don't have this, but they got used to the idea of just going on the internet, ordering their groceries, their sundries, their dry goods online, and having it delivered right to the door, and have realized, hey, this is kind of nice. I don't have to fiddle around with parking. I don't have to. I just hit the button and it shows up at the door.
Okay. Not just our urban friends doing that. Rural friends have discovered the convenience of calling in an order and stopping by, popping the trunk, and they put your order in the trunk and off you go.
Yep. Yep. I've done that.
Yeah.
It's pretty slick.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing that it prevents is those, the unplanned purchases.
Okay.
When you're walking through and say, oh, look at that, cookies. Yeah, right. I'll have some cookies.
Ooh, I could eat some cookies right now, actually.
Well, sure. Well, yeah, because they're cookies. But but it's just that the spontaneous purchases, there's a reason that the checkout lanes are lined with, you know, candy bars and mints and gum and magazines and stuff like that. Well, I wonder how much of that stuff is being bought now because of some of the changes that we're seeing in it. Bill was talking about the mid-mile in that last, you know, few feet of the supply chain.
We talked actually just yesterday about the just-in-time delivery system and how it may be just a little bit antiquated for this bold new future. He took it a step deeper into the supply chain, talking about the just-in-time manufacturing that's having a hard time keeping up.
Right. And what a great point. There is, you know, I keep going back and thinking about, and we talk a lot about fertilizer right now because of the price and because of the concerns about availability and everything.
Sure.
But, Davis, I go back to 2008 when we had that big surge in fertilizer prices. And one of the reasons for it was, well, I shouldn't say one of the reasons for it was, but the suppliers out there kept buying on the price increase. And then when the rug got pulled out from underneath it and the prices went down, fertilizer providers were left with high-priced inventory that they had to sell at half price in the following year. I don't know if it forever changed the fertilizer industry, but it did for the next 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
It changed the fertilizer industry. And I just wonder if we start to build up inventories, we start to change the way that we're doing things, how much of a shock it will take to the suppliers out there. If they're left holding high-priced inventory once, Davis, we will be right back.
Yeah.
We'll be right back to the just-in-time stuff.
I got to highlight this because both of our guests kind of mentioned this too. Not the solution. The new normal is not going to be built by legislation. It's going to be built from the ground up by the business starters. Bill mentioned that. I think about the packing stuff with Representative Hartzler. Yes.
Yep.
That's the free market,
great
baby.
Point.
That's the free market. Let her run.
That is a great point, man. It That's one of the reasons when I asked Representative Hartzler about the role of the federal government in fighting inflation, you know.
Right.
I'm not going to assume that you think there, the federal government has a role, but if it does, what should we be doing? So, yep. Interesting. Yep. All right, Davis, good stuff, man. Thanks for listening this morning, this afternoon. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Tomorrow morning, Ken Ferry, right here on AgriTalk.